to make up an island inhabited by men. Yet still, over all, it was green. For every acre of it that was not built or walked upon was given up to the low, round-topped herba trees, on the leaves of which feed the little worms that spin the silk that is made into thread and woven by the men and women and children of Lorbanary. At dusk the air there is full of small gray bats who feed on the little worms. They eat many but are suffered to do so and are not killed by the silk weavers, who indeed account it a deed of very evil omen to kill the gray-winged bats. For if human beings live off the worms, they say, surely small bats have the right to do so. The houses were curious, with little windows set randomly, and thatches of herba twigs, all green with moss and lichens. It had been a wealthy isle, as isles of the reach go, and this was still to be seen in the well-painted and well-furnished houses, in the great spinning wheels and looms in the cottages and worksheds, and in the stone piers of the little harbor of Sosara, where several trading galleys might have docked. But there were no galleys in the harbor. The paint on the houses was faded, there was no new furniture, and most of the wheels and looms were still, with dust on them, and spider webs between pedal and pedal, between warp and frame. "Sorcerers?" said the mayor of Sosara village, a short man with a face as hard and brown as the soles of his bare feet. "There's no sorcerers in Lorbanary, nor ever was." "Who'd have thought it?" said Sparrowhawk admiringly. He was sitting with 8 or 9 of the villagers, drinking herba berry wine, a thin and bitter vintage. He had, of necessity, told them that he was in the South Reach hunting Emmelstone, but he had in no way disguised himself or his companion, except that Arryn had left his sword hidden in the boat, as usual, and if Sparrowhawk had his staff about him, it was not to be seen. The villagers had been sullen and hostile at first, and were disposed to turn sullen and hostile again at any moment. Only Sparrowhawk's adroitness and authority had forced a grudging acceptance from them. "Wonderful men with trees you must have here," he said now. "What do they do about a late frost on the orchards?"
"Nothing,"
said a skinny man at the end of the row of villagers. They all sat in a line with their backs against the inn wall, under the eaves of the thatch. Just past their bare feet, the large, soft rain of April pattered on the earth.
"Rain's the peril, not frost," the mayor said. "Rot's the worm cases. No man's going to stop rain falling. Nor ever did."
He was belligerent about sorcerers and sorcery. Some of the others seemed more wistful on the subject.
"Never did used to rain this time of year," one of them said, "when the old fellow was alive."
"Who? Old Mildy?"
"Well, he is not alive."
"He's dead," said the mayor.
"Used to call him the Orcharder," the skinny man said.
"Aye, called him the Orcharder," said another one.
Silence descended, like the rain. Inside the window of the one-roomed inn, Arryn sat. He had found an old lute hung on the wall, a long-necked, three-stringed lute such as they play in the Isle of Silk, and he was playing with it now, learning to draw its music from it, not much louder than the patter of the rain on the thatch.
"In the markets in Hort Town," said Sparrowhawk, "I saw stuff sold as silk of Lorbanary. Some of it was silk, but none of it was silk of Lorbanary.
The seasons have been poor," said the skinny man.
4 years, 5 years now."
5 years it is since Fallow's Eve," said an old man in a munching, self-satisfied voice, "since old Mildy died.
Aye, die he did,
and not near the age I am.
Died on Fallow's Eve he did."
"Scarcity puts up the prices," said the mayor.
"For one bolt of semi-fine blue dyed, we get now what we used to get for 3 bolts.
If we get it."
"Where's the ships?"
And the blue's false, said the skinny man, thus bringing on a half-hour argument concerning the quality of the dyes they used in the great worksheds. Who makes the dyes? Sparrowhawk asked, and a new hassle broke out. The upshot of it was that the whole process of dyeing had been overseen by a family who, in fact, called themselves wizards. But if they ever had been wizards, they had lost their art and nobody else had found it, as the skinny man remarked sourly. For they all agreed, except the mayor, that the famous blue dyes of Lorbenary and the unmatchable crimson, the dragon's fire worn by queens in Havnor long ago, were not what they had been. Something had gone out of them. The unseasonable rains were at fault, or the dye earths, or the refiners. Or the eyes, said the skinny man, of men who couldn't tell the true azure from blue mud. And he glared at the mayor. The mayor did not take up the challenge. They fell silent again. The thin wine seemed only to acidify their tempers, and their faces looked glum. There was no sound now but the rustle of rain on the uncountable leaves of the orchards of the valley, and the whisper of the sea down at the end of the street, and the murmur of the lute in the darkness within doors. "Can he sing, that girlish lad of yours?" asked the mayor. "Aye, he can sing. Arryn, sing a measure for us, lad." "I cannot get this lute to play out of the minor," said Arryn at the window, smiling. "It wants to weep." "What would you hear, my hosts?" "Something new," growled the mayor. The lute thrilled a little. He had the touch of it already. "This might be new here," he said. Then he sang. By the white straits of Solea, and the bowed red branches that bent their blossoms over her bowed head, heavy with sorrow for the lost lover, by the red branch and the white branch and the sorrow unceasing, do I